Dermatology Snapshots, February 2024. Paper 1. Risk of paradoxical eczema in patients receiving biologics for psoriasis. Al-Janabi, Badbir Study Group, JAMA Dermatology. Why we chose this paper. Psoriasis and eczema rarely occur together, but we know that biologics used for psoriasis may trigger paradoxical eczema. Little is known about the relative risk of different biologic classes and who might be most at risk of such reactions. Study aim and design. A prospective cohort study using Badbir data involving nearly 25,000 biologic exposures in almost 14,000 patients. The aim is to explore any associations with biologic class and any other risk factors for the development of paradoxical eczema. Data was collected at multiple UK sites over 15 years. Nearly half of the group were on anti-TNFs. What were the main findings? There were 273 exposures, 1% risk, with paradoxical eczema in this group. Adjusted incidence rates per 100,000 person years were 1.22 for IL-17 inhibitors, 0.94 for TNF inhibitors, 0.80 for IL-12/23 inhibitors, and 0.56 for IL-23 inhibitors. Increasing age and history of atopic dermatitis or hay fever were associated with higher risk of paradoxical eczema. There was a lower risk in males. It was also noted that the risk was higher in those receiving concomitant cyclosporin at biologic initiation, but not methotrexate. Limitations, is it applicable? Development of paradoxical eczema may lead to treatment discontinuation or addition of concomitant immunosuppressants, so understanding risk factors is important for those patients, but the risk overall remains low. Only 19% were on IL-17 inhibitors, 20% on IL-12/23 inhibitors, and 8% on IL-23 inhibitors. 92% of patients were white. What's the take-home message? This data suggests that the risk of paradoxical eczema was lowest in patients receiving interleukin-23 inhibitors, compared with the other biologics classes. Increasing age, female sex, history of atopic dermatitis and history of hay fever were associated with a higher risk of paradoxical eczema. Paper 2. Surgical excision versus topical 5% 5-fluorouracil and photodynamic therapy in treatment of Bowen's disease, a multi-center randomized controlled trial. Armadi et al., Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. Why we chose this paper. There are multiple treatment options for Bowen's disease, but few head-to-head randomized controlled trials comparing the various treatments. Study aim and design. This was a multi-centre, non-inferiority randomised control trial conducted in the Netherlands. Participants had histologically proven Bowen's. Lesions located on the ears, nose, periocular region, nail unit, periungual tissue and on mucous membrane were excluded. Treatment groups. 1. Excision with 5mm margin. 2. 5-fluorouracil applied twice a day for 4 weeks. 3. 2 sessions of MAL-PDT with 1 week interval. The primary outcome was the proportion of patients with sustained clearance at 12 months after treatment. A non-inferiority margin of 22% was used. What were the main findings? 250 patients were randomised. Excision 84, 5-fluorouracil 82, MAL-PDT 84. At 12 months, the proportion of patients with sustained clearance was 97.4%, 75 out of 77 for the excision group, 85.7%, 66 out of the 77 for 5-fluorouracil, and 81%, 64 out of the 78 for MAL-PDT. P-value 0.0049 for absolute differences. Investigators and patients reported good or excellent outcomes significantly more after treatment with 5-fluorouracil and MAL-PTT than after excision. Limitations: is it applicable? It was only a one-year follow-up. Treatment with 5-fluorouracil was more intense than what may be used typically in the clinical practice. What's the take-home message? In this randomised controlled study, sustained clearance for 5-fluorouracil was 85.7%, compared with 97.4% for excision and 82% for MAL-PTT. With a 22% non-inferiority margin, 5-fluorouracil was deemed to be non-inferior, and authors recommend that this should be the preferred treatment for Bowen's. However, note that 5-fluorouracil was prescribed as twice daily for 4 weeks. Paper 3. Using ultraviolet light in diagnosing scabies. Scabies sign via Wood's lamp. Urelke, Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology. Why we chose this paper? We're all seeing increasing cases of scabies. Misdiagnosis is common. Most clinicians use dermoscopy to look for the tunnel sign. Authors of this paper highlight the use of a Wood's lamp to aid in the diagnosis of scabies. They report that when the scabies tunnels are examined with a Wood's light, a bright reflex is observed. Examples are shown in the pictures on dermatologysnapshots.com, with permission from Dr. Osler for use of the photographs. Paper 4. Bridging the gap in Bascule syndrome, a retrospective case series of recently described clinical entity, Jacob, Paediatric Dermatology. What is Bascule? We've come across a few cases of the recently described Bascule syndrome, which is an acronym for beer anemic spots, cyanosis with urticaria-like eruption. It's a recently described 2016 entity with episodic urticarial lesions and white anemic halos on a background of erythrocyanosis, commonly affecting the lower extremities. When should I think of it? Typically, the orange-red urticate lesions are triggered by standing and a bait on lying flat. The peripheral blanching with background dusky erythema are quite characteristic. Unlike classic beer spots, physiological anemic macules, in Bascule there is an associated cyanosis, urticaria-like eruption, and often pruritus and tenderness, and sometimes edema of the involved limbs. Sporadic cases reports thus far suggest treatments are often ineffective and little is known about the prognosis. What does this study add? Here, 17 cases of Bascule from a single centre are described in retrospective notes review. Average age was 15, range 9 to 22 years. Other than standing, showers and hot environments were triggered in some patients. Autonomic dysfunction was confirmed in 10 of the patients, of which 4 had POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. Some response to propranolol was seen in 3 patients, and to high-dose cetirizine, 40 mg, in 1 patient, but follow-up data was largely lacking. Limitations: is it applicable? Due to small numbers, lack of follow-up data, data on treatment, more data is still needed on prognosis, treatment options. But as the largest series to date, it does add to our understanding of this rare, under-recognised syndrome. Paper 5. Natural language processing to automate a web-based model of care and modernise skin cancer MDT meetings. Ali et al., British Journal of Surgery. Across all specialities, MDTs are becoming an increasing challenge. However, for the skin MDT, this is even more of an issue. The incidence of skin cancer is increasing faster than any other malignancy. While traditionally high-risk SCCs and all melanomas were deemed necessary for MDT discussion, recent BAD guidelines have highlighted the importance of MDT for high-risk BCCs. This paper was a tricky read, but essentially authors developed a natural language processing information extraction model to extract perioperative tumour and surgical factors from the histopathology reports. A web application with bespoke programming used data from this model to provide an automated clinical decision support system mapped to national guidelines and generating a patient letter to communicate ongoing management. Performance was assessed against retrospectively derived recommendations by two independent and blinded expert clinicians. It seems a long way from clinical application, but this paper highlights an important issue that skin MDTs are increasingly stretched, and we need to address the issue and develop innovative methods of managing the rising caseload. Paper 6. Staphylococcus aureus induced drug resistance in cancer T cells in Sézary syndrome. Van der Waal, Blood. This recently accepted paper will be published in Blood. We know that patients with Sézary syndrome are prone to staphylococcal infections and they have a poorer prognosis due to treatment resistance. However, the mechanisms underlying the effects of Staph aureus on CTCL pathogenesis are not fully understood, and the impact of Staph aureus eradication on disease activity and cancer treatment outcomes remains an open question. This lab-based study shows for the first time that staphylococcal enterotoxins can induce drug resistance in malignant T cells, providing a novel rationale for antibacterial therapy targeting Staph aureus in CTCL patients. Overall, these findings suggest that Staph aureus and enterotoxins cause clinical treatment resistance in Sézary syndrome patients, and that antibacterial measures may improve the outcome of cancer-directed therapy in patients harbouring Staph aureus.
Thank you.